This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Wow. Good afternoon, Melbourne. This is Joy 94.9 and you are on the Escape Hour. We were laughing in the studio a minute ago because someone messaged in and said, what radio station am I listening to? And I thought, how very dare you? This is Joy 94.9 and you're listening to the Escape Hour. My name is Russ Masterton and across the table from me, I've got the most glamorous woman in the world. Yes, I do say that and mean it. I have the one, the only, the gorgeous, the darling Fiona Brooke. How are you?
Well, with an introduction like that, Russ, I'm even better now than what I was, certainly when I woke up this morning.
Oh, bless you. It's good to have you back.
You've been away and we're going to... I've got a tan.
You have got a tan.
I've got tanned arms. I've got a sunburnt bottom from snorkelling.
Sunburnt bottom?
Wow. From snorkelling because, you know, you can put a T-shirt on and cover your back, but you can't cover, you know, up your butt, really.
Was that nude snorkelling,
no,
was it?
No, it wasn't nude snorkelling, but anyway, so I have come back from a beautiful trip to Bali, which is what we're going to talk about today.
Well, I've got something for you. Listen to this. I'm sure you're going to love it because it'll take you back. And one, two, three, and...
Oh, little gamelan.
Listen. This is a pre-introduction to our Bali Ubud show. Isn't that beautiful?
Perfect.
Is that a Balinese instrument or something?
It is. Oh, it is.
It's the gamelan.
Now, Fiona has just spent a week.
Not long enough
experiencing this. But, you know, when you listen to this sort of music, you really do picture yourself with that special someone or your FBF forever, you know, and you're in a luxury villa.
Which we were able to say, I can say we were in a luxury villa.
With your own private swimming pool.
And it's hot. You might have a cocktail. Probably have a cocktail.
I'd like to learn this instrument.
I heard this instrument being played when I went to see the theatre, you know, the famous theatre.
There's quite a bit of different theatre
I thought I was seeing the national.
The various different traditional dances that they do there, from the monkey dance to the all of the great mythological stories that they tell through dance. It's very beautiful.
And that is the voice of our lovely Tess, who is also joining us today on our Ubud show. How are you, Tess?
I'm well, thank you.
That's good. So we are going to be doing Ubud and Bali today, and so we want you to sit back and listen. We're going to talk about food, art, culture, rainforests, terrace rice paddies, Hindu temples and shrines. Oh, just so beautiful, isn't it? Anyway, we might just stop that wee music for a second.
You know, might people want to talk to us about Bali or if there's anything they'd like to mention.
Oh, yes.
Don't forget, you can contact us very easily and we will discuss anything that you'd like related to Bali and Indonesia. Contact us on SMS 0427 Joy 949, phone us 1300 Joy 949 and have a chat to our lovely team in the front desk. Email us onair@joy.org.au.
Anything about Ubud or Bali today, please send us in a message because we're here to talk about this fantastic destination with you. Now on to this week's news. Fiona, how are you? You know, the Melbourne Comedy Festival's been on and hasn't it been an amazing festival this year? We've only got this weekend to go and then it's over for another year. I know our very own Adam Samuel at Joy 94.9 had his own show.
His show was fantastic. I couldn't make it because I was away, but you saw it.
It was sensational, absolutely sensational, and we're very lucky that one of our own Joysters was actually in the show, which was good. But there are so many good gigs on this weekend, so don't go. And they're all bargain basements, so I highly recommend that everybody gets out to Melbourne and go to the Comedy Festival. It is. This is the last weekend for the Melbourne Comedy Festival. Now, how do we all feel about that poor lady that was sucked out of that plane this week, wouldn't that have been scary?
I did hear, and there was a nurse.
And I do news. That's terrible.
Yeah. There was a nurse, of course, on the flight that was able to assist her during that awful time.
was very scary for her because they were basically on a US airplane, and it took off out of New York for Dallas. And basically what happened, the engine blew up and part of the engine smashed into the window, and the window got sucked out, and this lady got sucked out. Well, not sucked out, she got stuck in the window of the plane from all of the cabin pressure.
She got stuck.
Well, yes, exactly right. But she unfortunately passed away. But
did she?
Yeah, she did. Unfortunately, she had a heart attack, which was very sad. But statistically, she was very fortunate because there was a lady on board who knew CPR, a nurse, and she did everything she could to try to keep her alive. But unfortunately, she did pass away. But
that's a terrible story.
It is a terrible story.
Unusual too. It doesn't normally happen, does it?
No, air travel is still the safest way to travel.
Yes.
I know in my time of flying, I have only had, I think, one incident where the oxygen masks came down, and I can remember sitting there thinking, oh my God, this is it, and putting the mask on, and then hearing somebody say to me, now don't forget to put your mask on your children. I'm thinking, bugger the children, I'm just looking after myself.
They do say put it on yourself first.
That's
You're
right.
not much help if you can't breathe. Yeah.
Well, there was something in the news the other day or on social media where there was a plane with the masks dropped down, and everyone had them on wrong.
Oh, did they?
Yes, there was a photo on social media, and they didn't have it over their nose. They had it under their nose. I'm making this on radio face that nobody, of course, will see. But, yeah, there was people with their masks on wrong.
Have you ever been in turbulence, Fiona?
I have.
How did you cope?
Well, I have this hilarious thing when it comes to turbulence. I giggle outrageously because I'm nervous, right? I mean, who wouldn't be? And so I start giggling like a little girl. And I have been in planes with friends who are really annoyed with me because I'm just doing this stupid giggling. But it's like a nervous reaction.
It's scary stuff, though, isn't it? I mean, I know when that plane starts bopping around all over the place, and you think, what about you, Tess? Have you experienced any turbulence in your flights? Or
when my children were very young, so we're talking 22 years ago, I was on a flight to LA, and it was so bumpy that I was crying.
Really?
Not that anyone felt sorry for me, but I'd never travelled.
Yes.
I think it's 15 hours or so.
Yeah, it is about 14, 15 hours direct, yep.
Yeah, so I had little children and I was very quietly crying, trying not to upset them. But people were, baggage was flying everywhere, and so, I don't know how turbulent something can be and you can still be safe.
I was afraid of flying up until I turned about 40, and then after that I've just come to the conclusion, I've been on quite a number of flights now. If this is my time. So I usually sit there and do a bit of what Fiona does. I giggle a little bit. If it's a big dip, I go, ooh, feel that. Put my hands up in the air like you're on a roller coaster that sort of stuff. No. But, I mean, I do remember being on a plane from Sydney to Buenos Aires once, and we flew over the South Pole, and we had, I reckon, about 6 hours of turbulence non-stop.
That's a bit excessive, isn't it?
It is a bit excessive. And I said to my friend next to me, I didn't stop talking to my friend next to me. And in the end, she just said, look, you're just going to have to shut up because you're making me very nervous and you're making everyone around you very nervous. So if you can just take your turbulence and stuff it where the sun don't shine. And after that, I felt much better. So,
That's how you handle it.
That's how I handle it.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
You are on Joy 94.9. This is the Escape Hour, and we're here for our Bali and Ubud show. We have just had a listener request in to please turn that horrible Balinese music off.
No.
We have done so. But
they did not say horrible.
No, they didn't say just please turn it off, did they? Okay, all right.
Well, there might have been a swear in there.
Okay. But we do love our Balinese music. Fiona, you've been away. You've got a special guest in. Please tell all.
Well, I'm a regular Bali goer, but this time I went along with my good friend Michelle, who's in the studio with us. Welcome to the show, Michelle.
Thank you very much, Fiona.
So we went to the Ubud Food Festival, which, of course, is in the beautiful city of Ubud. town, city, and it's been going for 4 years, and it was really an extraordinary experience. Normally, I go to Bali and Ubud to a health retreat. This was the opposite of a health retreat. This was an eating retreat, wasn't it, Michelle?
Absolutely. No regrets.
No regrets, and I don't really know where to begin on this little journey, but
now, Michelle, did you get a sunburned bum too?
Yes, I did. It's one of the pitfalls of snorkeling. You think about everything else except for that thing that sort of bubbles up by the top.
I love it.
And it was worth it because we did swim with some massive manta rays, which partially the size of this room.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
Thank God you didn't do a Steve Irwin on us thing. So,
well, I believe that was not going to happen. I mean, they are a bit sort of, I get a bit scared when they're actually coming straight towards you.
Yes.
And you're like, oh.
So but you've got your goggles and your mask on and you are swimming and the next minute a giant manta just swims over the top of you.
Mostly underneath.
How exciting.
We're on top and they'll just come straight for you and then just glide underneath and you wonder how they're not touching you. But
wow.
Now, it should be said that that was not happening in Ubud.
No.
Because, I mean, I know a lot of people have been to Bali, but Ubud's in the centre of Bali, as we most people know. But this experience we had was actually on an island just off the coast of Senua, which is called Nusa Lembongan. And actually there's Nusa Lembongan, Nusa Senegan, and then Nusa Penida. And it was a manta point is actually off Nusa Penida. So we did that as a respite from all the eating and drinking that we did while we were in Ubud.
But, I mean, Bali really is one of those fabulous destinations where you can – I know we went there once and we rode bikes up to the volcano, which was very exciting in my much younger and fitter days. And we also did a cooking class. Now, it came to –
I did one of those.
Aren't they amazing?
They are amazing.
It came to the conclusion of everybody that I was with that I'm a hopeless cook. And I just managed to cut up a few veggies and watch everybody else do it. But what did you make, Tess?
I was trying to think before what we made and I can't remember.
Probably a rang dang or a gang dang or something.
I might remember in a little while.
All right, we'll come back to that.
Well,
but you
it
can
does
do
actually
amazing
provide
things.
Some context for us actually, because now Michelle has been on the program before, because Michelle has creates travel guides to bars and restaurants and has done so for Melbourne, and has also just produced a Bali bar and club a bar and restaurant guide, she has brought into the studio to show us, which we actually launched while we were in Ubud.
You know that's going to go well. And you know how many Aussies go to Bali every year?
Oh, thousands.
1 million.
Wow.
1 million Australians every year go to Bali. So they need your travel food guide, don't they?
It's probably people like Fiona and I who go maybe two or three times a year as well.
That is true.
Bali Files. We'll call you Bali Files.
Bali Files. So Michelle has been on the program before. However, we do have some other context. On the subject of cooking classes, one of our recent guests was Janet Deneve.
Oh, yes.
You remember
She's from Ubud, isn't she?
She is an ex-Melbourne lass who has lived in Ubud for 30 years. She runs cooking classes at her restaurant, which is called Casa Luna in Ubud, and she is the founder of the Ubud Food Festival.
Oh, wow.
So the Ubud Food Festival started 4 years. This is the fourth year, and it grows and grows and grows. Now, when you think of it, I always think of my experience with the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, which is a fantastic event, but the Ubud Food Festival was quite a different experience. So many wonderful, incredible meals, so many unique ingredients, so many, you know, people that are travelling, like there's chefs from all over Indonesia who come to the Ubud Food Festival. So it's not just about Balinese food, it's about Indonesian cuisine as a whole, and bringing Indonesian cuisine to the forefront, because, of course, that's probably the biggest issue that they would have, is that people think of nasi goreng and nasi campur and gado-gado, but what else is there to Indonesian cuisine? And that's part of what the Ubud Food Festival is designed to do, is to expand people's understanding of the incredible diversity in Indonesian cuisine, because, after all, it is actually one of the most populated archipelagos in the world. I don't know how many islands there are.
There's thousands.
Thousands.
Less than 20,000, but more than 15,000.
So Michelle went to the Ubud Food Festival for the first time last year and encouraged me to attend this year. Michelle, what did you find with the festival this year, or from last year, that made you want to go back again?
Well, as you said, it is an incredible group of people coming from all over the place. So there's one particular chef, one particular story that really grabbed my attention, and that was about Charles Toto, who's known as the Jungle Chef, and he comes from Papua. So he was trained as a formal chef and had worked in a sort of a formal environment in Papua, the other half of Papua New Guinea, and was often required to take people on sort of jungle excursions, you know, overnight, sort of extended ones. And he'd be taking these guests and they'd be lugging all this food and equipment with them to just cook and provide these, you know, these meals for them that they expected to have. And he then went back to the hotel and said, well, why are we doing this? You know, I can feed everyone from the jungle. We don't need to bring everything. I can do it here. So he started to do these expeditions, and people loved it. He's cooked for Melinda Gates. He's even had Mick Jagger on one of his excursions. And he's created this mission now to reintroduce Papuan cuisine to the Papuans, because they didn't realise sort of how broad it was, or it became a bit of a, I suppose, a lost art, as sort of many developing nations start sort of taking food from Western countries and looking at anything that's pre-packaged and processed as good, where we clearly know that's really not the case. So I think he's trained more than 100 chefs now to cook their own food, and it's really quite fascinating. So we did go to one of the lunches that he put on and experienced some very, very interesting ingredients as well as dishes that were quite delicious.
And methods of cooking he brought out at the end of this particular meal, these earthenware pots that had been used to prepare all the food with, and they were covered with
lots of banana leaves,
and so that this is the method that they'd used to prepare it, and it was really just remarkable from a technique point of view, but also learning about where the food comes from. The wonderful chef that was prior to him is also a really well-known chef, and he presented dishes that had all these unique ingredients that we would never have known about. And then at the same time, he talked extensively about the tribe where he was from originally. So these people, you know, they're professionals in their field.
It's very interesting, isn't it? Because they are saying that with Indonesian cuisine now, what they're doing is they're going back to these their local areas and bringing in all these particular roots and spices and things that that we haven't seen on the menu before, and introducing them to our taste buds. What did you think, Michelle? Did you enjoy the different cuisines that you tasted? Was there anything out there that you thought, wow, I can't believe I'm eating this?
Well, there was one thing we had, which was called the sea almond. And it was perhaps like maybe a small avocado-sized seed.
Nutty seed thing.
Cut in half, and it had sort of a fairly perfect circle, I suppose, inside. Sort of a nut that you eat.
Yes, that's right. And it grows actually at the edge of the ocean, at the edge of the of the sea. So, and then there was another bamboo egg, which was a component of a bamboo that has a beautiful egg-like edible piece in the middle of the bamboo.
Wow.
That was why it was called bamboo egg. And then there was this other incredible herb which is being touted as the newest superfood. Uh-huh. It's called moringa. And believe you me, moringa was in everything. Moringa is...
Oh, what's moringa?
Well, it's a leaf.
From a tree, a small leaf, really.
Yeah.
I've just given up kale, by the way.
kale is going to be so 2017.
Oh, I'm glad you hear that, because kale and me just don't get on.
Oh, I saw that Facebook post you did a few days ago about that. No, moringa is... I have actually brought back some moringa noodles. There was, it's ground into a fine powder, which added to the dishes, has all these superfood qualities to it. I mean, I know that we talk about superfoods, you know, it's a little bit of a joke, but the fact is that there is a lot of nutrition within this particular leaf. And so many other things. I mean, I brought in some of the menus from the meals that we consumed.
And we do have to go to a break. But
which
when
is
I,
a good time for us
good
to
timing
reflect.
To go through those menus. We're on. You're on Joy 94.9. This is the Escape Hour, and we are talking Ubud and Bali.
I was at work.
I was riding my horse.
I was microwaving a watermelon.
My iguanas escaped.
There are lots of reasons why you may have missed your favourite show, but don't worry, because our podcast team has you covered. They'll work through rain, hail and national glitter shortages to bring you the best bits of every show. Visit joy.org.au and click on the podcast tab, or head to the iTunes Australia podcast store and subscribe to your favourite shows for free. Thanks to our podcasters, you'll never feel guilty about missing a show again. Joy.
This is Joy 94.9. You're on the Escape Hour, or the... Yes, it is the Escape Hour.
It is the Escape Hour.
With Fiona and Russ, we've got our special guests in today, Michelle and Tess. We're talking Bali and Ubud. If you'd like to talk to us today, or if you've got any questions about Bali or Ubud, please message in on 0427 Joy 949. We'd love to hear from you. Now, girls, Ubud is not by the sea, but it's in a beautiful, beautiful...
Isn't it?
Yeah, it's in the mountains, quite right. And it's in the beautiful tropical rainforest with lots of gorgeous rice paddy terraces. And
indeed.
Expand on that beauty for me, will you?
Well, we stayed at a lovely hotel just outside of Ubud, and when you woke up in the morning, you stepped out into the swimming pool, because, of course, it had a swimming pool, but beyond the swimming pool was just these beautiful fields of rice paddies, and there was a temple beyond that as well, which was really rather lovely. Now, of course, there's some parts of Ubud which are very busy and very built up, but then there are other parts. I was wandering around the back streets of Siam, which is kind of in the hill beside Ubud, and some divine windy little streets with, you know, beautiful foliage dripping out over all the houses. The thing is that everything gets to look really old really quickly because of the rainforest. It just has a tendency to take over.
So Ubud's becoming the new ish place. It's I mean, I know Seminyak has been there for quite a while, and Sanua, but yeah, Ubud is the new ish place, don't you think,
well,
Michelle?
Look, it certainly has been quite popular for a long time, and it does attract a different crowd. So a lot of people love surfing and the beach and that sort of thing, and that's great. But Ubud offers something a little bit different, and so I think Julia Roberts and the book Eat, Pray, Love has a lot to answer for. So it was the it was the prey area of the book.
Yes.
And so there's various healers there. It's very much a mecca for people interested in yoga. And Bali in general, particularly Canggu and Ubud. Canggu is by the coast. But those particular areas just have so many options for buying incredible juices, fruits, salads. It's an incredible place for a healthy retreat. Whether you want to, you know, reduce your intake or not, it doesn't matter. But, you know, there's coconuts. You can have coconut water all the time. Incredible juices. And everything is as fresh as it can come, straight from the kitchen garden.
Do they have a lot of retreats that are put on by the Balinese? Because when I had a quick look on the internet, I wanted to do a retreat. Everything seemed to be arranged ad hoc by someone who didn't live in Bali.
I think that most of the retreats are... There are, of course, a lot of Westerners who live and run retreats. There is a retreat that I've been to many times, which is actually run by a Balinese family and has been done so for many years. So I think that you would find it would be a combination of... it's designed for Westerners, though, because I'm sure that the Balinese themselves don't necessarily feel the need to detox.
No.
Their lives perhaps are
they're
not as toxic
healthy
as
lives.
Ours.
Yeah.
Of course, one of the things that you will find in Bali is that they have rice with every single meal, and they consume so much rice. As a matter of fact, they have to bring in their own, they have to bring in rice from other countries because they can't grow enough rice to feed everybody.
Wow. And is it all white?
It's all white rice.
Okay.
And a lot of what they produce and what they bring in is actually very low quality white rice. So there is a movement to that we certainly experienced when we were there, because they're looking for alternatives to rice consumption in Bali. So that could be using heritage rice grains, which would be either red rice or other less treated rices, but also using other starches and carbohydrates such as sago and
sorghum,
because they really do need to look at creating these alternatives to improve the health of Indonesians and Balinese as well, because they do have very high rates of diabetes.
Do they?
Yep, it's common in a bunch of Asian countries where rice is consumed, because they have rice every meal.
Right, and of course if it's white, I suppose the GI factor goes right up, doesn't it?
That's correct, yes. So,
and they're beautiful sweets. That wouldn't help.
Oh, well, they are sweet mad.
Are they?
If you like sweets.
Were you?
Well, I like sweets.
Yes.
But, you know, I could take or leave them. And so I always enjoy, you know, a banana pancake for sure. And they make beautiful desserts, but the Indonesians love sweet things. So if you like cakes and things like that, they make some, I mean, magical ones at the Casa Luna Bakery, for example. It's also, ubud is an interesting sort of case. The Indonesian government has decided that they will actually make the Ubud Food Festival and ubud itself a case study for how Indonesia should market itself internationally from a food and beverage perspective.
That makes sense.
So unlike a lot of other Asian countries that have exported their cuisines, the Thais have exported their cuisine a lot through a lot of tourism and government funding. The Vietnamese obviously have a massive diaspora, so Vietnamese cuisine has spread very broadly. But Indonesian cuisine seems to have stayed quite thoroughly in Indonesia. And this is part of the message with the Ubud Food Festival, is to distribute and broaden people's understanding of Indonesian cuisine beyond what you experience when you go to Bali.
So, ladies, just out of interest, what Indonesian restaurants have we got here in Melbourne town that people might be able to go to experience some of this cuisine?
There's only a couple.
Not many. There's one in Little Bourke Street called Block M, which is a pretty simple takeaway place, so you can certainly get your rendang and your nasi goreng then.
There is another place that's been there in Victoria Street in North Melbourne. It's been there for ever and ever. It's called Warung Agus, or Warung being a local eatery, and of course being a common name in Bali. Now, I used to be able to find this place very easily because it had literally a forest of plants out the front. I think there was some OH&S, and they've been rigid. That has since gone, unfortunately. But it was quite charming.
What a shame, because North Melbourne can be a bit concrete-y, can't it?
So they're the only two restaurants that I know. I guess we could put it out to our listeners. If anyone knows of an Indonesian restaurant that they have visited in Melbourne or in Sydney or in any other part of the country, we would love to hear more about it.
SMS us 0427-JOY949. It would be great to hear from you. So, Michelle, you have been to the Bali Ubud Food Festival twice now. Is it getting bigger and better every year? And when do you book for it? What's the take on that for people who are interested for 2019?
Well, look, it's a very well-considered event. So this year was quite interesting because about 80% of attendees, and I think 4,000 in total, were from Indonesia itself.
Oh, wow.
Some from Jakarta. Many people from Jakarta very much treat Bali as a bit of a playground these days. So it has a lot of appeal internally as well as externally. It was May last year. This year it was April. So it'll probably be around that time again next year. So you need to go to the website really and sign up so that you keep aware of when things happen. So the event is made up of special events, like quite elaborate or simple or interesting dinners that you can go to, which you have to pay. But there's also cooking demonstrations, and there's also talks and some other practical experiences as well. We went to one, for example, called Bubur and Bahasa. Bubur being Balinese or Indonesian porridge, and we had an hour's class of Bahasa Indonesia, which was fantastic. So that was quite cheap, $15.
The equivalent of about $15 or $16.
There were some fantastic talks you could attend as well.
Absolutely.
For free. And there's also the public sort of, the hub area with lots and lots of different stalls where you can experience a lot of food and drinks for very cheap. But for the special events, yes, you do need to book in advance.
some events I was not able to get a ticket to, and one event Michelle wasn't able to get a ticket to. So some of these events do sell out.
So probably I had my best meal on this trip in Bali ever. And that was with the Locavore team. Locavore is considered the best restaurant in Indonesia by the world's 50 best, or world's Asia's 50 best. And they teamed up with a chef from Gagan, which recently won Asia's 50 best, number one.
Which is in Bangkok.
In Bangkok, yes. Rido, Chef Rido Anton. So they put on together an 18-course meal with the Gagan style exclusively emoji menu. And this is very much fine dining, elaborate presentation, interesting ingredients. And it was spectacular. Everything varied between being incredibly delicious and an absolute taste sensation, which is quite a feat when you're doing things that are very innovative and elaborate and fantastically presented, because there's usually hits and misses. But this was amazing and incredible value as well. These meals really don't cost anything like you would pay here, but you're having, you know, a world-class and unique experience.
And that really is the go with Bali and Ubud these days, isn't it? You certainly the average Joe Smo couldn't afford to go to these elaborate restaurants in Melbourne or Sydney. But if you are looking at some fine dining with some new and innovative cuisine, you're going to get that in Bali.
Bali definitely.
I think it makes you braver too. If you've got a menu with 18 dishes, you're quite happy to go, because if you don't like something, you're only saying no to something small, and then you're moving on and being quite positive about having a go at different and new dishes. It's a great idea.
Well, that's right. I mean, we ate a meal with a few things that I certainly wasn't going to consume, but fortunately there was enough people on the table who were actually going to chow down. I think one of the most challenging ones, I'm just trying to refresh my memory here through the menu to find the dish which everyone went, oh.
Was it crispy sparrow?
Yeah, crispy fried
sparrow.
Oh. Oh, and there was cow brains.
Oh,
yeah.
No.
So the crispy fried sparrow.
I love you both, but I couldn't do cow brains.
I have a terrible confession to make.
I was brought up on lamb's brains.
Were you? Yeah. Mm-hmm. My father loved lamb's
brains.
We
had to eat them.
Really?
Mm-hmm. We had to eat liver and stuff like that when we were growing up. But I tell you what, Michelle laughed at me because, of course, you know, I'm a pescatarian. And on our first day there, someone offered me a cricket, and of course I couldn't resist a deep fried cricket. I had that; it was quite tasty. And then they also offered me a dragonfly, which I said yes to. And I woke up the next morning and went, I can't believe I ate a dragonfly. But then I was like, no, I can't eat that. That's chicken. Like, no, crickets and dragonflies, but you're not going to eat chicken.
And yeah, she's a very particular insectarian.
Yes.
It sounds like it. And so what would be your favourite restaurant then in Ubud at the moment out of the furore of restaurants that are up there, or top three? If someone was going to jump on a plane tomorrow and stay up there, what would you select, Michelle?
Look, it's incredibly difficult to choose. I mean, when I did this new guide, the one venue that inspired me to do that was called the Siam House. Now, I've only had a few dishes there, and it's a Japanese-Latin fusion, not specifically Nikkei, but very much Japanese and Latin. Stunning food, but it's the setting. It is the most spectacular setting. So it's all down south by the coast where you normally go for your sunset viewing, but you can view the sunset from up there, looking down at sort of a plunging cliff and across just greenery as far as you can see. It is magical. Mm. And you can have kombucha cocktails, so they're a little bit healthy.
I love it. What about you, Fiona? Where would each place be?
Well, that one is, yes, again, it's tough. I mean, of course, if anyone is planning on going to Ubud and you are interested in eating at Locavore, for example, you do need to book in advance. So don't think you can just rock up to Ubud and get a table, because you won't be able to. There's a delightful little South American place opposite Locavore called Pica, which is tiny. I think it seats about 20 people, which I've always really enjoyed. And then, of course, I went for the first time to Nusantara, which is Indonesian for archipelago. So that was incredibly delicious. And then, of course, there are some amazing other vegetarian and other well-known restaurants. There's Mosaic, which is very, very popular. I went to another place called Moxa, which is in a kind of like a beautiful forest setting, which is a plant-based restaurant. That was really extraordinary.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLD, TIQ community radio station Joy 94.9.
Indonesia music. This is Joy 94.9, and you are on the Escape Hour. We do have another Indonesian restaurant in Melbourne that someone's just messaged us in about. Fee, where's that?
Well, thank you, Stephanie, for letting us know. It is Uni's Kitchen. That's Y-U-N-I. S Kitchen on High Street in Northcote. Incredible Indonesian restaurant. So I am going to go and check that one out. I have not been there, but that sounds amazing.
It does sound pretty good, doesn't it?
It does.
So I did some homework on Ubud this morning. I have been there. My classic trip to Bali and going to Ubud was visiting the monkey forest. Oh, now, those monkeys there, they are a little...
They're mean, aren't they?
Oh, they're little rascals, yeah. I tell you. I can remember getting out of the car and I had a muesli bar in the pocket of my shorts and one of them came running up to me and scrambled up my leg and took the muesli bar out and opened it up and ate it. And I thought, well, goodness me. It was
and
a bit of a shock.
He knew how to do that.
Yep. It was a bit of a shock. He knew how to do that. Then at one stage we were down in the monkey forest area and a woman had one jump on her head and she was sort of a bit upset by this. But and of course, instead of anybody going to aid her and help her, everybody's saying, just stand there. I want to get a photo of this.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God, that's excruciating.
Oh, how caring and sharing.
Yes.
Well, I've been to the monkey forest once. That was the first time I was in Bali, which was probably about 18 years ago. And, look, you know, I'm not a monkey fan. None of them jumped on me because I gave them the really evil eye.
Oh. Did you?
You come near me, you little monkey shit. Oh. Anyway, but there
daytime
is the monkey.
Radio.
Well, there is a lot of monkey poop there well.
Yep.
So, no, I'm not a fan of the monkey forest. In fact, you know, when I was driving around coming from our accommodation to the festival, I noticed that the monkeys were actually wandering around on the street and I was wondering, I'm sure none of them are dumb enough to get run over.
Well, you wouldn't think so. They're pretty fast, though, the monkeys.
They are. They're pretty slippery little things.
And so the other things on the list to do around Ubud area is to go to the Ubud Art Market.
I have not been to the Ubud Art Market.
It's supposed to be very good. You could also go to the Elephant Cave, which is supposed to be quite spectacular.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes. I have been to the Elephant Cave, but it was a long time ago. One of my favourite places to visit outside of Ubud is Tutugunja.
Right.
Which is a beautiful water palace and temple where you can go and be blessed within the waters or you can just wander around.
I've been
around.
There. That's fantastic.
So what religion is that?
Gorgeous.
Is that so
Hindu? They're
Hindu. Hindu, yeah.
So the Balinese are Hindu. It's a slight variation on Hindu called animism. Animism, I think that's how you pronounce it. So there's a lot of worship of animals within that. So, but it is Hindu.
Hence the monkeys get away with murder.
That is right.
They do. They yep. absolutely do. But, yeah, that that Hindu temple is fantastic.
It
I've
is
always
beautiful.
Wanted to get in and be blessed in the waters there. But
so when you get in, you have to, if you're not wearing the right clothes, you do have to be covered head over your shoulders and put a sarong on. And then they tie, I believe it's a red sash, which divides the top half of the body from the bottom half of the body to that is how you are best dressed when you go to the temple. So I think I go there like every year. I didn't have time this time to do that because I was too busy eating and drinking. It was a fantastic success and I think that I would love to see more in some of these chefs and some of these traditions actually come to Melbourne for some of our food festivals because it's right on our neighbour. Obviously, it's very neighbouring us and we don't know enough about it. And I think that we're, you know, a very curious food culture, so bring it on.
I noticed too, Fee, that fair trade's in Bali.
Mm-hmm.
And so was there any of native Bali products being shown?
There was. So there's an incredible woman there who has a company called Javara. And she is really well known for her social enterprise, bringing Balinese products to the fore and actually making sure that all the farmers are getting fair pay.
Mm-hmm.
And what she's done now, I've got to refresh my memory on this a little bit. What she's done is she has revitalized farming as a way of life and as a way of earning a living, because around the world farmers are predominantly over the age of 60. It's a common problem.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's a worldwide problem. And what she's done through her work in actually showing people how they can farm new products, not just necessarily traditional, but how they can farm new products that she's actually in Indonesia been able to drop the average age of farmers down to 20 and 30.
Wow.
So what she's doing, I mean, she deserves a Nobel Peace Prize, I reckon.
A lot of people too, I believe, you know, beg in the streets. And I was reading up on this gentleman who gave up his life in the West to help the, is it Muntigunung community? And so they, when they were begging, he then helped them to actually start that farming, and they now have a massive cashew industry in,
is that right?
In Indonesia.
Wow.
Which of course is worldwide as well. I mean, you know, I can't even buy Australian cashews, so I think they're doing extremely well. Most of the cashews we buy here are imported, aren't they?
They are, absolutely.
You know, which is a bit sad.
Yeah.
There are a lot of fantastic initiatives. I was sitting next to a young woman at one of the dinners who was from Sydney, and she and her husband worked for an NGO. They went to Dili for work. They fell in love with Dili and with Timor. They decided, they recognised that the Timorese were not engaging enough with their local foods because they're always had an association with their traditional foods as being poverty food. Food that you, you know, ate because you didn't have any money, and they would prefer, they were much preferring Western food. And she was explaining that it's a great culture of fear around food because in places like Timor and Papua, of course, the tribes are quite separate. People don't travel a lot. So that there would be foods, for example, in the tribe over there from you that you would not know how to use or not be familiar with.
Oh, wow.
So they had started a social enterprise restaurant where people were able to, where they were preparing and cooking with local chefs their traditional foods and then serving it back to the community. So there are an enormous amount of initiatives in that area, which is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, it's good to see.
So it's interesting, there's been an influx of airlines that are now flying out of Melbourne. We've got a new one that's flying out of Melbourne to Bali, which has brought prices down again.
Oh,
so
really?
You, absolutely. So you should be able to get to Bali now anywhere between $500 and $550. So this current sale that we're seeing is on up until Anzac Day. So if you're thinking of going to Bali over the winter months, get out now and get on to any particular airline's website and see what sort of an airfare you can get. But I would only pay between $500 and $550. Bali is a destination for travellers itself is very affordable. Travel insurance is incredibly cheap to go to Bali. Accommodation in every price range is incredibly good value for money. Most hotels and villas include breakfast for free in the accommodation. They a lot of them also include transfers as well to get you from the airport
to the accommodation.
Yep.
And, you know, that's no small feat when you have to go to, it could take up to 2 hours to get to Ubud sometimes if the traffic is bad, and they'll pick you up at the airport, they'll drop you at the airport. If you need to catch a boat, for example, over to one of the islands, the and there's a number of boat companies, fast boat companies that do that, they will actually pick you up from your accommodation, whether it be 2 hours away in Ubud, and then if you get off the boat, and they'll take you to the airport, which I've done a number of times. So very good value and, you know, real service.
There's a few gay resorts for the boys if the boys want to stay somewhere that's 100% gay only. So there's Villa Angelo, Spartacus, Phil's Place. So that's all where you can go and stay in an atmosphere which is primarily just gay men staying there.
Is that in Seminyak?
It is in Seminyak.
As a matter of fact, I think I walked onto a little gay part of the Seminyak beach once.
Did you?
Yeah.
Did you?
And you had a party?
Did you have a party?
I just noticed that there weren't many ladies on the beach.
That normally happens in those parts of the beaches, don't they? You never know what the boys are going to be up to.
That's exactly right.
But somehow or other you felt quite safe.
I did feel quite safe. Yeah. It was just a funny moment. I went,
Oh, there's no women here. Well, the ladies all like to stay at a place called the Diana Villas in Sevignac. So they're very lady friendly at the Diana.
So that'll
Villas,
be the home of the bikini.
Yeah, which is good. Now we get to this part of the program where we do discuss the GLBTI rights in Indonesia, and they're not good. They don't accept. Certainly, marriage equality does not exist in Indonesia, and they don't. They're not overly keen on, you know, they certainly don't promote the fact that they're anti-gay, but they, it's a Muslim country. Yeah. So let's get real as far as what, the history is based there. The interesting stuff is the Balinese themselves are, very liberal people and very friendly people. So in Bali itself, you'll have, a huge population of gay and lesbian expats there. A lot of gay and lesbian people own businesses there. There are a lot of gay and lesbian bars. So the Balinese, are very accepting of our culture and our community, but they're also very, very modest people. So
they are indeed. Yep.
So it's not the sort of thing that they want to, you know, they wouldn't want to see, for example, I don't know, just to be outrageous, two gay guys having sex on the beach or something like that. That's so not on in Bali. You know,
it's not that on here.
No, it's not really. But
male, female, male, doesn't really.
Yeah, exactly
much
right, exactly right. So I just think you've got to learn to be, you know, in Bali itself. You know, you've got Bali Joe's gay nightclub. You've got all these fabulous places that you can go and be indoors and have a great time, but just be mindful. The Balinese, you know, they are Hindu. They're fairly modest. They're lovely people, but as always, you know, each to their own is the best way. Is the best way to put it.
Yes, I would imagine that to be true.
Yeah.
And you know, I've met some lovely gay Balinese gentlemen while I was there. They were really, really charming. And you know, I mean, it's just a beautiful holiday. I know there are a lot of people that haven't been to Bali before and say that they don't really think they want to go. If you've just heard about the bad parts of Bali, you know, there's so much more to it. I mean, you can get away from it. You can get amongst it. It's really, there's a lot of options.
What's the best time of year, you think, if you had a choice? What months would you say was the best weather in Bali?
July and August,
I believe,
is high season as far as good weather.
I would say don't go in July and August.
No,
because
that's exactly what I was thinking.
Insane, apparently. Mm. Insanely busy. I believe that probably, you know, March, April, May, and then certainly October, November.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are the nicest months.
Once you get into December and January, you've got the rainy season.
Yeah. I've been there in December. It's still rainy season. No, it rains a little bit at night.
Lucky. I think it's just luck, don't you think?
I'm with you. Maybe. Because when it does rain, God, it rains hard and fast, and then it clears up really quickly.
It does. Mm. It's not like you're going to be stuck inside for 3 days.
Have you been to Bali, Tess?
Yes. Yeah. I went to Nusa Dua. And
like
stayed
it?
In it. I loved it. My sister was staying in a resort for her 60th and I stayed in a different resort and that's when we had the cooking lesson and it was green curry.
Remembered.
It was just basic. Really I
yummy.
Thought it would be so. It was gorgeous, but the top chef at this restaurant at the resort, and it was one of those huge resorts that they have all over the world, and I can't remember the name of that now, but that's why it tasted so good. And, of course, it was all it was actually all native ingredients that they'd used. So
awesome.
But that was very quiet. And so I feel like I haven't really discovered any Bali. So, you know, today's been a real eye-opener for me.
Every time I go, I think to myself, next time I'm going to do that.
You can
climb mountains.
Well, that's right. The things you can learn to surf.
You can go snorkeling. You can go learn to surf. You can do all sorts of things there.
Canyon tubing is next on my list. You get in a tube and you get in the water and you go tubing down these canyons.
Yep, that sounds pretty magical.
I'll be doing that one.
What about a bit of kite surfing?
I like kite surfing.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Or paintball games. I've always wanted to do paintball games.
I'd like to do a
Bali art class.
Oh, that'd be good.
And then bring it home.
Yep.
Now we're nearly at the end of our show.
So next week, Russ.
Where are we going? We're going to Cuba next week.
I can't believe it. I always wanted to go to Cuba.
Give me a cigar and some Latin dance and I'm right in there. Woohoo! It's going to be fabulous, isn't it? So, Fiona, I can't thank you enough for coming in today and telling us all about your Bali and Ubud trip.
It was a great trip.
Absolutely fantastic.
So fresh in my memory because it was just 3 days ago.
Oh, wow.
Tess, we
I'm really jealous.
Tess, we love having you on the show and
Thank
can't
you.
Wait to see you
I
again.
Love being here. I actually learn heaps just being here.
It's just wonderful, isn't it? So it is time for us to go. This is Joy 94.9. It is the Escape Hour. Next week, please join us as we will be going to Cuba.
Thank you for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.